welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. My name's Jack Swindlehurst. We are back again to dissect Cambridge United's start to the season. It all started so well, but maybe one of the wheels has just started to become a little bit loose. I'm joined by the usual suspects, Jordan Warland, welcome.
Greetings all.
Tom Walker, welcome.
Hello mate, good to be back.
And Owen Kiernan, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Very good. Well, as I said, Cambridge United have started their season and, yeah, we got very excited early doors with Cambridge United keeping clean sheets and scoring goals for fun. But as I said, yeah, things have started to unravel a little. So after the first four league games, how do we think things are looking? Owen Kiernan, I'll come to you first.
A mixed bag, really. You know, we started off really well with, you know, those eight goals in two games, none conceded in three. I think that took everyone a little bit by surprise, didn't it? You know, I don't think any of us were really expecting the team to score so many goals, nor to concede so few initially. So, you know, yeah, first couple of league games, all was good, all looked well. Then Tranmere happened, and yeah, you know, Tranmere were a good side. We kept a clean sheet against them. You know, I think a lot of people expected them to do well, but you know, we didn't really look that great going forward against Tranmere. And then, you know, yesterday was, you know, while it was far from the worst I've ever seen us play, it, you know, just, yeah, didn't click really, did it? So,
what were people more surprised with? The fact that we scored eight goals or the fact that we didn't concede any goals in three games?
The clean sheet.
I was surprised with all of it. It all took me aback. I think it was reassuring that we scored eight goals. It was probably more reassuring that we scored the goals than that we kept the clean sheets in a way. Obviously, there's an old sort of adage that goals win you games and defence wins you championships. But I think given the problems we've had, we talk about in sort of our group chat, I think the problems we've had going forward, probably even counting our promotion season, to be fair, like several years with going forward, it's been encouraging to see that that's an area that we seem to have sort of at least sort of rectified a little bit. You know, it seems like there's promising signs there going forward. But yeah, I mean, the defensive solidity has been one thing. I think there's one or two concerns about our ability to manage games, our ability to dictate games. But, you know, the start of the season, it was no goals conceded until obviously went away to, you know, the sort of playoff finalists from last year. It's not necessarily a bad thing. And there has been that solidity there, even though I do feel at times, even in games that we've won, we've been sort of living on the edge a little bit, which it shows one or two things that we talked about in the preview might actually be quite accurate.
Someone made a really interesting point on the message board that, yes, we've scored eight goals, but technically we've only scored against two League Two teams, and there's three League Two teams that we've played, if you include Newport in the Cup, who incidentally we play again on Saturday, that we've not scored against. So it's kind of, I don't know, what I've learned so far in the season is that there's a real difference between what's on paper or what's on the table and like reality. So yeah, great to see eight goals scored, but actually, you know, we had a lot of games where we, you know, we haven't scored against sort of opposition. And you look at some of the, you know, you look at some of the extended period of the game against Exeter yesterday, you look at a good chunk of the Tranmere game, and you just feel like, well, goals weren't going to come at all. I know obviously with Exeter, you know, like Owen said, it wasn't the worst we've played. You know, thinking back, you know, comparing it to say Calderwood last season, like it was disappointing yesterday, but we certainly played a lot worse. We had opportunities in the first sort of, you know, quarter of the game that if we had put one of those away, could have been a different occasion. And I think that's the big difference between what we saw yesterday against Exeter versus what we saw against Carlisle on day one of the season. You know, Carlisle dominated that game for big periods, had a lot of possession. But the big difference was we were clinical. We scored our chances, you know, straight from the off. You know, Luke Hannon's goal was quite early in the game. But yeah, I agree with Owen and Tom. Out of the question, I was definitely more surprised by the fact that we hadn't conceded in three games. The first goal that we did concede in the league technically didn't come from open play. Very, very surprised by that, because I still feel that our defence is one of our weakest areas, especially at the centre-back pairing. Yeah, and I mean, and as bad as the game was against Exeter yesterday for periods, it's kind of a peculiar one in the sense that we were kind of our own worst enemy. We gave away a bad penalty, and the second goal from Exeter came because of a Kundi mistake, a slip. You know, we've gifted Exeter two goals, which, yeah, was really sort of quite poor and quite surprising given how tight we'd been in the opening sort of three league games so far.
Yeah, I think it sounds very odd, but hopefully it makes some sort of sense. It was almost encouraging that the goals we conceded should be quite easily rectified. It's completely illogical, but in a way it sort of encourages me that these aren't like structural issues, it seems. You know, Kundi slipping, a silly tackle in the box for a penalty. You know, Exeter could have had two or three more goals, but even those were coming from sort of our own mistakes rather than, you know, like genuine structural issues with the team necessarily. That's something that should just sort of work its way out as these guys get back used to the sort of swing of Saturday, Tuesday, as it's obviously going to be this season. You know, I think we forget in a way that, you know, because obviously there's been so much football over the last 6-7 months. It's been on every day, but the players that we've got at Cambridge United haven't played for 6 months. So some of it's rustiness. I think some of it yesterday was very frustrating, that it was just pure sort of, it was just laziness. It was just sort of almost like complacency for the sort of start we'd had. But hopefully that's just like a stern word in the change room sort of thing, and that almost sorts it out. So in a way it's encouraging, but what I would say, and one of the sort of, you know, talk about what we've sort of learned from the first few games of the season, one of the sort of recurring themes has been that we haven't dominated games, which sounds odd given the start that we've had on paper. Obviously, you know, going into the game at Exeter, you know, top of the league, scored 8 goals, conceded none, you know, we're still fourth in the league, you know, beaten by a good Exeter team. But even against Carlisle, you know, again, on paper, we win very convincingly 3-0. They dominated the game. They absolutely dominated us. I think in terms of possession, I think they literally had about 75-80% of the ball. And that's an area that needs to be improved, and obviously needs to be improved pretty quickly. That is a structural issue, because that's happened time and time again. You know, Morecambe was us taking advantage of a very poor side. And then we go to the League Cup game at Newport. All right, it's not that important, but it's the same trend. Tranmere absolutely dominated us again. And I know it's a bit different at the moment, no fans there, but that's a game at home that we probably should be having a bit of our own sort of, you know, we should be dictating that a little bit more. And, you know, like I said, you know, yesterday at Exeter, a lot of our sort of, you know, a lot of our issues came from our own mistakes, but you always felt that they had the control of the game rather than us, albeit we did start very brightly. So that's been one thing that we've learned, and one thing that maybe needs looking at. I don't know if that's a personnel thing. I don't know if that's a shape thing. Obviously something they're going to need to think about. We're obviously missing a pretty key player in O'Neill, who I think would help with that. But yeah, that's maybe been one area for concern, one area for sort of improvement. I don't know if you guys would sort of agree with that.
I think the very first thing that that Tom said about the result yesterday against Exeter and the fact that the goals were kind of our own doing and our own downfall, and rather than a bigger systematic issue, is, you know, I think he's skirting around the point that we are a promotion team and we're going to be chasing for the title, and you know, for teams to beat us, we have to have off days. And unfortunately, that was yesterday. I jest, of course. I think yesterday might be healthy. I think it might be healthy for us in the long term. I think that it was coming. You know, anyone that watched the Tranmere game, you know, would know that we were very fortunate to get a point and a clean sheet from that game. apart from a sort of a 15 sort of minute period in the first half where Luke Hannan missed an absolute sitter, that was one way traffic and all Tranmere. And I'm not convinced that the goal that was disallowed was offside, but I'll take it, obviously. So I just feel like it was coming, you know, the Tranmere game, you know, like Tom says, the Carlisle game was misleading to an extent. Although, you know, credit where credit's due for getting those goals. So hopefully the result against Exeter yesterday can serve as kind of like a positive thing, and maybe will allow Bonner to, tinker with the side, maybe change the shape like Tom was talking about. Because before the game against Exeter, you could definitely argue that, you know, two wins and a draw, no goals conceded, don't change the side. Why would you change the side if things are going right? I'm not confident enough in Mark Bonner yet to say that I think he is that kind of reactionary manager, and that he will be able to turn things around quite quickly when things go wrong. I know obviously he turned things around quickly when he took over as caretaker last year, but that's a different situation. The pressure is now firmly on him a lot more. And I'm not confident that he'll mix it up as much as he probably should. And I think that's something that we need to look at, because when you say, what have we learned from the season so far? I think despite the great results and the league position and the goal scored and the clean sheets, there are some quite obvious things in there that need to be addressed all across the team, from the front two, midfield, to the defence. So I think we've learned quite a few things from these opening four games. And I don't know, I think shape is a very, very interesting one. I was very frustrated yesterday with the fact that we were playing 4-4-2. And this is going to sound a little bit contradictory, but I've been surprised that Bonner has been very positive so far this season in sticking with playing two up front. I genuinely didn't think we would see that from him, especially at away games. I was adamant going into the Exeter game yesterday that he would go 4-4-1-1. But he didn't do it, to his credit. He's trying to create this team that starts games very strongly, which we did against Carlisle and Morecambe. And, to an extent, we did against Exeter yesterday. We had some chances early on, like we said. It's a testament to him that he's trying to play this sort of positive formation of playing two up top. But personally, it's not working for me. I don't know if it would work if you change one of the two strikers to one of the other options we've got on the bench. We can talk about Harvey Nibbs, or if fundamentally the shape needs to be a bit different, and it maybe instead of playing two up top, we play, you know, three sort of attacking midfielders and bring in the likes of El Mazzouni, allow Wes to play a more advanced free role rather than shoehorning him in as a winger. That's something that I would like to see next week against Newport. I don't know. Owen, how do you fix a problem like Wes?
It's a tough one. I mean, I remember reading some comments when we signed him, and people were saying, oh, he'll be great as long as you don't play him on the wing. And that's exactly what we're doing with him. And I think it's, you know, he's almost got too free a role without it being like a defined free role. If he was playing number 10, like, you know, you could kind of expect him to pop up anywhere on the pitch. But at the moment, he's doing that, and he's swapping wings. He's, you know, going deep. He's going central. But, you know, do the other players know where he's going to be? You know, they're expecting him to be out on that wing because that's where he should be. And, you know, that's allowing Noel to come forward. And, you know, Noel's a great crosser and, you know, can play up and down that wing. But, you know, it also leaves him massively exposed at the back. Something you kind of touched on there, Jordan, is about the actual team. And, you know, Bonner's not changed it in the league games, in the last three league games this year. And, you know, it's kind of like a bit of a curse, I suppose, that we started off so well, because, you know, you don't mess with a winning team, do you? You know, you've got a team that has played well, but it's not conceding goals. Yeah, why mess with it? And, you know, on paper, you'd look at the results we had and think, yeah, that's all right. You know, two decent wins, a draw against, you know, a fancied side. So, yeah, why change it? But, for us that have kind of watched the games, you can see there's problems there. And, you know, it's maybe worth pointing out that this probably isn't Bonner's first choice 11. You know, we all know he wanted to start the season with O'Neill. You know, he's out now for a couple of months. So, you know, May isn't really the right replacement for O'Neill. I think that's been shown. I mean, you know, until he went off against Carlisle, we were looking good. You know, we had control of that game. And O'Neill went off, May come on, and we were battered. Like, you know, against Morecambe, you know, they were poor. I suspect that's probably going to be a freak result this season. I don't think we'll see too much more like that. You know, against Tranmere and again yesterday, you know, May was fairly anonymous. He, you know, he doesn't, I don't know what he does. And I'm not saying O'Neill stands out as this amazing player, but from what we've seen of him, he complements Digby. You know, he lets Digby get stuck in more, go a bit more box to box, go forward, go, you know, do what he needs to do while kind of relying on someone. But yeah, I'm not seeing that in May. And then, you know, again, with Cundy in defence, it's, you know, I think Bonner wanted to start with Darling. You know, he knows Darling. Darling performed pretty well last year. You know, he got taffed out of the team. Cundy's come in and, you know, to his credit until yesterday, he looked all right. He's looked pretty decent. But, you know, he's young. He's got, what, like 4 Football League games under his belt. You know, Darling doesn't have many more, but, you know, experience counts. And, you know, you need an experienced centre back, and we have Greg, but, you know, it's, yeah, I don't want to say too much about Greg because I love him and I've been quite mean about him in the past, but, you know, I'd like to see some changes in defence.
So I think on that,
sorry, Joe, I was just going to say, I think that's the obvious area for improvement, isn't it? You know, we just talk about their structural issues with the team, you know, the way we set up, that sort of thing. I think a lot of it is sort of personnel issues, to be honest. Like you say, Owen, quite rightly, May's not a carbon sort of copy replacement for O'Neill. You know, O'Neill's had his ups, had his downs. You know, we said before the start of the season, he's going to get injured at some point. It's happened every time, every year he's been with us. It's going to happen again. May's not necessarily the right replacement. I think there's too much onus on Digby to do it, pretty much all of the defending at the moment. You know, pretty much except sort of heading away from crosses, that sort of thing. But centre back is the one area which I think is crying out for an upgrade somewhere. We're not necessarily light on bodies there, which is obviously good. But I think in terms of, you know, where we are in the league at the moment, albeit early days, you know, we're fourth, it's still been a decent start to the season. If you want to maintain that and you want to finish where we are or maybe slightly higher, we need a better centre back than obviously what we're playing at the moment. We need a sort of Leon Legg type. I think with Cundy, it's obviously difficult. You know, he's played pretty well. He's been a different type of player from what I've expected, to be fair, in that he's actually been quite aggressive, quite a sort of, you know, goes out to sort of win the ball. I sort of had him down and then just sort of assumed that he'd be a bit more of a, you know, pass the ball along the floor sort of defender, but he's a bit more robust than that, which is obviously good. But we forget that he's still a young guy. He's, you know, he's never played in the Football League before this season. He could probably do with a really established leader alongside him. You know, I think we all know that Greg Taylor is an excellent servant for this football club and probably can be for the next 2 or 3 years, but is his role in this team to be the rock at the heart of your defence? I'm not sure in 2020. So that's one area. But again, I do think it's important to sort of caveat all this. It seems like we're coming across quite negative in a way. And I do think there are concerns, so it's only right that we point them out. But, you know, we are fourth. You know, obviously the Tranmere game wasn't great. It wasn't a brilliant spectacle, but a point against Tranmere, who I think have a decent case to suggest that they were wrongly relegated from League One last season. They're probably an okay, like a sort of comfortable League One side, really, in terms of the personnel they've got. It's still a good result. You know, going away to Exeter is always tough. We've absolutely battered Morecambe, a place where traditionally we've struggled, and we've sort of, you know, clinically put away a Carlisle side who had a lot of the ball. So it's important to sort of retain some of our positivity. But yeah, obviously, it's also right that we, you know, point out some of these issues.
I think on the positivity note, it's an old cliche, but I think the Tranmere game is a game that you would tag with the with the category of we would have lost that in previous seasons under different managers. So yeah, there is positivity there. And actually, I think we performed better against Exeter yesterday than we did against Tranmere. So it seems odd that the performance improved and got the bounce that you would have hoped, but we actually got a worse result in terms of no points and goals conceded. I agree with the defence, the centre back sort of issue. I'd be really surprised if Darling doesn't start coming back into the squad now. He must be fit again. I would be surprised if we don't try and add a centre back, even if it's via the loan system. My concern from the Exeter game and the Tranmere game was that, with the exception of Kyle Noyle, who I would say so far has been the best player for us over the four games, there seems to be a reverting back to playing it long from out of the back, and it's not working. Ironside yesterday against Exeter struggled to win those sort of aimless long balls played up to him. So I think, I think there's a change in the defence that I would like to see, which would involve us playing out to our midfielders a little bit better. We seem to be overrun in the centre of midfield, like Owen and Tom have said. I think that's down to the fact that Liam O'Neill's not in the squad. So it'd be good to maybe look to make an addition there. The jury's out on Adam May for me. There have been parts of him so far this season which have been promising. The goal against Morecambe was a lovely finish. So the jury's out. I'm definitely not going to write him off just yet. But I said in one of the preview pods that, you know, if we're going to play 4-4-2, we need options in centre midfield. And, you know, I know we've got Lewis Simper, but I think Lewis Simper and Adam May is two young men that haven't played any Football League games before this. I think we need another option there. It'd be interesting to see long-term if El Mazzouni plays centre midfield, because he seems to have been used that way over the last couple of games when he's come on from Bonner. I've got issue with some of the substitutions that Bonner's done in the last two games. I think the issue for me is the shape and not getting the best out of the best options that we have in the team. And like Owen said, you know, everyone could tell you that Wes's best position is central or behind the strikers. And I'm not comfortable with him being shoehorned in as a winger. It leaves us exposed. Tranmere two weekends ago done their homework. They saw that against Morecambe that Wes wants to play this free role. And when he does this free role well, he's brilliant. You know, look at his involvement in the goals first half against Morecambe, the assist for Mullin, which I'm refusing to call that an own goal. That was a top corner finish for Mullin. Obviously, Wes's goal himself, you know, he's over on the left-hand side starting that move, and he's to the left-hand side of the box when he finishes it. But yeah, Tranmere done their homework. If he's going to have this free role as a right-sided midfielder, you just need to double up there. And they were having lots of success first half against us going down the wings. Yesterday against Exeter, the lad that won the penalty, remind me his name, that shouldn't be in League Two.
Williams.
That guy who's too good for League Two. He's a wide player, and you know, Dunk is doing a great job at left back, but was very exposed. And I think the penalty came down to the fact that he was, left a little bit exposed, and that sort of, you know, should have been stopped from sort of Williams being allowed to dribble into the box. So going forward, I would like to see us be more, move away from this rigid 4-4-2 and maybe mix it up with how we sort of lay out our midfield.
I think that's been one of the issues for me, sort of in the sort of early part of the season. We, as the games have gone on, and you know, like I say, we have had a decent start to the season, you know, with fourth in the league, albeit early days. But the one overriding theme is that we are starting to look a little bit one dimensional. That obviously comes with the fact that it's probably an unchanged lineup, you know. And that comes from the fact that we've had good success with it. So there's, you know, obvious positives there. But it's almost like Ironside's an out ball and he's the out ball. And there's not a lot, not a lot of sort of thought going into it other than sort of get it up to him, try and flick, he'll try and win a flick on and hopefully it sort of skids through to Mullin or Lahanan or Houlihan running onto it. I think it's interesting because, the Morecambe game, we saw Wes Houlihan at, what you assume these days is his best, absolutely controlled the game. He was outstanding. And I don't think it's necessarily going too far to say that if you get Wes Houlihan in that sort of form in a game and he's in a position where he's allowed to sort of run the show, he's the best footballer in this division by a long way. I don't think that's a massive overreaction to what we've seen so far. I think it's quite obvious he possesses quality that no one else in this league does. So maybe the aim for Bonner and the way that we get our success this season should be, how do you get the best out of Wes Houlihan? And how do you get the best out of guys like El Mazzouni, who again possess quality that shouldn't really be at this level, I think. So maybe that's where, this is where he earns his money, basically. I felt yesterday the changes that he made at Exeter were firstly too late, but were almost quite lazy. Like, you bring Nibs on for Hannon, I think it was, and he just puts him like for like on the wing. And realistically, we probably could have done with a bit of a change in shape, try a different approach sort of thing. So that is that's obviously another area. But this is just, I guess this comes at the time of the season, right? That it's still very early days. There's only so many games we're looking at, and this team will develop over the next sort of, probably eight months, assuming the season finishes. And probably what we finish the season like is probably going to look very different from what we are now. So these are issues that are just going to sort of have to work themselves out. But this is where Bonner really earns his money. And it's interesting because we obviously had the Ghost Pod, before the season preview. And one of the big talking points we had there was about accountability and things like that. And one of the things that seems interesting to me is that the idea that there's still massive issues structurally at the football club have just gone, like, they've just vanished. And one of the things that people were talking about when Calderwood left was that we need to get rid of Bonner, we need to get rid of everyone. And all of a sudden, throughout this sort of caretaker sort of interim period, everyone's on side with him straight away. But he's never had this period where he's maybe lost a game and had to react to it. Because the first time he lost the game was obviously Orient, and then after that, the season finished. So he's never had a period where he's had to sort of react, change something. So this is going to be an interesting to see how he does that. And it's a real test of character, and obviously probably the toughest game that we could have as a football club is coming up, obviously in Newport. So I'll be interested to see how it goes.
So surely he's got to pull his finger out of his ass soon, because 200 minutes without a goal in the league and not making those changes till that late yesterday. Surely with players like Nibs on the bench, who's not had a look in, you've got to be that manager and make that decision. I mean, maybe if you brought him on the hour mark, he'd done nothing, we'd be here criticising him for bringing Nibs on at that time. But surely you've got to be doing it earlier than that, don't you think?
I mean, he's brought Nibs on as a winger twice now, and it's not his best position. The guy's a centre-forward. He's a fairly decent centre forward. He's got a few goals last year. Bring him on as a centre forward. Ironside wasn't doing anything yesterday. He was really ineffectual. Mullin seemed off the pace. I think a few of us noted that. I don't know if he was injured because he stayed on, but put Nibs up front. That's his best position. You got El Mazzouni, who can play out wide. He put him in the centre. To me, it seemed like that was a prime opportunity to, you're chasing the game 2-0. We wasn't totally out of the game against Exeter. We had chances, they controlled the game really, but, we did have some chances. We could have, taken them, and, things could have been different. And, at that point, there's no point being defensive when you're chasing the game 2-0 away from home. Put Nibs on up front, maybe take Ironside off. You've got Dallas on the bench there as well, who barely had a look in all season. Go a bit more attacking. Go try something different. Change the shape, because it was quite clear after about 40 minutes it wasn't working yesterday, let alone after 75 when he finally made the change.
I know
that is one of the things, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were obviously talking sort of throughout the game, you know, sort of between ourselves. And like in the lead up to half time, you know, you're 2-0 down. We were all saying like, change it at half time. You know, it's like the 80th minute when you're bringing El Mazzuni on. Like, what do you want him to do? The game's finished by that point, essentially. You know, except something, you know, remarkable turnaround, which obviously has happened under Bonner, but it's not something you can sort of hang your hat on and sort of rely on. This is where it'll be interesting this season, because I don't want this season to be written off. And obviously, I'm not saying that's what's happening, but I feel like there's a danger that it might just be accepted that this is sort of how our season's going to go, that we're probably going to be sort of mid-table, we're going to batter the likes of Morecambe and then lose away at Exeter, and we're going to finish somewhere in the middle of the pile. We shouldn't just be accepting that. You know, change the game early. Like Exeter were there to be got at yesterday. We did it in the first 15 minutes. But like Owen says, it would have been nice to have seen maybe just a slightly different approach. Do things a bit earlier, take the initiative. And that's obviously, like we've said, a theme has been that we haven't controlled games properly. It would have been nice to have seen us try to do that. For me, the way that I would try and do that, if I was managing the team, I'm not a professional football manager, but what I'd maybe like to see is put somebody else in midfield as well. It allows Wes to get in his preferred position, which is obviously just behind the striker. Maybe makes us a more interesting outfit going forward, rather than just what seems to me just to be sort of lumping it to Ironside. Maybe Houlihan behind Mullin, El Mazzuni, Hallett out wide. Then it takes a bit of pressure off the likes of Digby. It takes a little bit of pressure off May, who's obviously the jury's still out on. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple of weeks in that regard.
Tom won't like me bringing up Northampton away last season, but I will. One of my many takeaways from that horrible day in the rain was Colin Calderwood sending on Harvey Nibbs as like an attacking midfielder, and it just didn't work. And I was just baffled yesterday watching the Exeter game, you know, 2-0 down within 35 minutes, and thinking like, how do we change it? How do you make a sub? Like, what do you do here? And you know, Mullin and Ironside were very, very quiet. You know, take one of them off and put Nibbs up front, like Owen says, in his best position. So yeah, bringing him on and sending him out wide was really baffling. And it reminded me a little bit of Orient away at the very end of last season, where he brought Sam Smith on and put him out wide left of a front three. I mean, I'm not against a 4-3-3 formation, but use the right players within that formation. And yeah, I think the Tranmere game, I just felt like it was crying out to have a fifth midfielder. We were getting overrun in midfield, and you know, like I said, credit to Bonner, has been very positive in playing two strikers regardless this season, and not, you know, maybe changing it against better teams or changing it away from home. That's like a really good statement of intent, but at the same time feel a little bit like he's nervous to pull off a striker if you're chasing a game or you're not in the game as much, because it might be seen as counterintuitive or negative. But I generally think the last two games would have really benefited from, yeah, not having the two up top and maybe mixing it up with the midfield. And you know, yesterday the passing was probably the worst I've seen so far this season. A lot of missed passes or unsuccessful passes, and we really needed some sort of drive from midfield. And I really thought the first sub that should have come on would have been either putting Wes in a central position to do that or putting El Mazzuni in a central position to do that. So great line from Tom earlier about, you know, this is now an opportunity for Bonner to show his worth and to earn his wages and see how we react from this, because we've had a very, very positive start to the season in terms of results and goals scored and clean sheets, and people quite like that. So I think there's an appetite now that actually we're not going to just sort of write off the season and be like, nah, let's aim for 16th. You know, people will be like, well, we can score 5 goals against people or 3 goals against people. So we want to see that sort of reaction. And yeah, I personally think the the changes that need to be made for the next game, the next league game against Newport, involve the front two. I wouldn't be starting Mullin and Ironside. I'd like to see a different combo. If he wants to stick with two up top, let's see what you know, Nibs or Dallas can do alongside Mullin. I think Ironside looked a bit tired yesterday. Maybe give him a break. And October is going to be a really tricky month because we've got, you know, Newport, who are currently top, got Port Vale, who are a tip to do well this season, got Warsaw, who I tip to do well this season. So, yeah, it's
Bolton,
who are flying with their, you know, three defeats on the trot, but still a very, very good team. It's a cliche, isn't it? You know, don't look at the league table until 7 or 10 games in. But if you start with, you know, three very positive results, that is going to, you know, taint it slightly. People will be wanting to look after 7 or 10 games and see more than just the wins that we've got so far. So a really interesting point in the season now, to see how we progress, see how we react from sort of that first defeat. And, you know, like we were saying, maybe there could be something healthy from losing. You know, the game was obviously disappointing, but we weren't the worst that we've ever been. So it's not a bad defeat. So, it'd be really, really interesting to see how bold Mark Bonner's going to be in terms of sort of mixing it up.
It makes me wonder if the board's ambitions are going to change a little bit based on the start to the season. You know, it's something we've spoken about before, and that, you know, I think the board's ambition for this season was kind of merely to get through it, to survive. You know, it's obviously, we're in very difficult times right now. You know, they're making a little bit of money from iFollow, but it's, you know, it's sod all compared to what they'd make from a match day. You know, they're probably not going to see any away iFollow money, you know, because I can't see us selling 500 on game passes for an away game when we're, you know, we barely do that for a home game. So, you know, it's like, I think, you know, previously we said, like, yeah, the board just wanted to kind of get through this season. You know, we've heard Mather say about, you know, about the government kind of kicking the can down the road when it comes to support. And he's speaking kind of quite passionately on that, which has me a little bit concerned. Like, you know, he obviously knows the finances of the club. And, you know, if he's kind of coming out and being not necessarily outspoken, but being very, you know, very vocal on the subject, he obviously knows something we don't. So, you know, that's a big concern. But having seen us start off pretty well, you know, are they kind of going to sit and think, actually, you know what, like, we could get ourselves out of this league, you know, with a little bit of investment. You know, we got these two American guys come on board. Can we cap them up for, you know, 100 grand between them or something? And, you know, not go shit or bust, but, you know, at least give it a go. You know, maybe try and get in, you know, getting someone with a bit, you know, a bit more proven at this level or the level above. And, you know, yeah, maybe pay him a decent wage for the season, but actually make a real go of it, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams in the league that are in a similarly bad position financially as us, to, you know, are probably going to be thinking, yeah, let's just survive, let's get through it. So, you know, I think, Tom, you said in the group chat before, you know, we're probably only a couple of players away from challenging, and, you know, it's an easy league to get out of, this league. You know, four teams go up, you know, the top, you know, like the top kind of 7 or 8 are in the playoffs. It's, let's give it a go. Let's hope the board kind of share our ambitions and back us.
I think there's two quite interesting points that come from that. I do think it's a really good thing to bring up with regards to that sort of thing. The first one is from a pure sort of footballing context, that obviously we know as a team the potential's there to do well in this league. You know, we've seen us putting, you know, two very comfortable victories competing against Tranmere, obviously lost out against Exeter. We've obviously mentioned there's positives and negatives that have come from that game. We said it a lot sort of last season and the season before, you know, we'd come up to the start of a new month and it'd be like, we'll know what sort of team we are after this next run of fixtures. And this month is exactly that sort of month. You know, it comes so fast and so quick. You know, we're playing, I think, Jordan, I think you mentioned 8 games during October, obviously one at Exeter, and then obviously 7 more, including the trophy game. And a lot of these games are against teams that you would expect on paper to sort of be up there this season. And this is a real test of what we can be this season. So from a pure footballing context, I think what we've seen is there is an opportunity there. And like you said, Owen, we're not that far off, I don't think. We obviously know what League Two is like as a division in terms of you've probably got one or two at the top end and one or two at the bottom end who are sort of quite far apart. And then in the middle of that, it's injuries, it's can you keep your players fit, it's a little bit of clever management here and there. But it's also just getting in a little bit more experience where it's needed. And that's the sort of addition I think you're referring to there, Ryan, just bringing in maybe like that centre-back that pushes on to the next level. That's obviously a slightly separate conversation. But the other thing is, and something else you raised there, Ryan, is what I follow. I wonder if the board are maybe realising, and obviously not just ours, but others, it's actually really important that we're quite good this season and quite good to watch. Because obviously in previous years gone by, even if we're doing really badly, people still go to the football, you know, it's an event. But now it's very easy to just not watch it. And obviously it's so important that people are buying these passes and stuff. And people are only going to buy an iFollow pass if we're doing well. You know, the 3 p.m. blackout's gone. The sort of passing fan might see it as a choice between watching Cambridge get stuffed away at Walsall, or they might see it as, I don't know, Man United Arsenal that might be on the other side that they've already paid for in terms of like Sky subscription, that sort of stuff. So that's one area where, and I don't want to say speculate to accumulate, because obviously it's a very difficult time and the primary concern is about getting through this season in terms of the actual solvency of the football club. But it might be one of these scenarios where they're like, it's actually really important that we are quite good this season. So maybe let's just make that addition that we need to ensure that we are sort of, if we're not sort of comfortably in there, we're there or thereabouts. So that's one of those interesting ones. But I think just with regards to the sort of games we've got coming up, it's going to be a really interesting period of time just to see where we're at as a club. Obviously, the first real tests we've had are, I would suggest, obviously the Tranmere and Exeter games. And the games we've got coming up are of pretty similar standard. If we come through these and we're in a similar position, then there's no reason we can't stay there all season and really give it a go. And it's, I think, again, like I mentioned a little bit earlier on, I think it's obviously important to balance out maybe some of the, you know, we're obviously going to look at issues and pick those apart first and foremost because they're the talking points, right? But it's also important to sort of mention that it's still been a very good start. There's been clear positives and obviously the biggest one we've talked about already is like the forwards. Mullin looks like a proper goal scorer, that sort of thing. So, again, it goes back to this thing that there's a lot of positives and a lot of negatives. We've learned a lot about the team, but I wonder if it's just kind of confirmed some of the thoughts we had before the season. But, we'll know more in 4 weeks and it'll be interesting to see how it develops.
Certainly interesting to see how Cambridge get on in these tight fixtures. I think squad rotation will probably need to be a necessity, really, for Bonner and his players there. And there was some unhappy clappers already posting online about asking when Waddock's going to be taking charge after Bonner gets the boot. I think if there's a bad run of games in the next 4 weeks, then there'll be a lot of hashtags forming on Twitter and people calling for Bonner's head. But like you say, Cambridge United, after a pretty promising start, are in a good position in fourth place after those games, but need a few goals in the coming games, and it'll be interesting to see how October goes. Right, coming up in the second half, we're going to talk about the prospect of fans getting back to grounds at some point in the future, and also looking at some of the players that Cambridge United have featured this season. Welcome back to the second part of Under the Abbey Stand. So we've looked back at the start of the season that Cambridge have had and looked ahead to a very busy October. As you may remember on the last pod, we were in the midst of uncertainty to whether fans would be returning to grounds. Cambridge United had their test event planned and then a government announcement threw that into disarray. And then, as we all know, the test event didn't go ahead. And as we look forward, the possibility, probability and likelihood of fans being in grounds seems no clearer now than it did back then. Jordan Warland, you're a man with his finger on the pulse of the world. What do you think? What's going to happen? shed some light on this.
$1 million question, isn't it? Well, firstly, I just want to start by sending my sympathies to you, Jack. Everyone knows who listens to this pod that you are a massive Carlisle fan.
Yeah.
You were desperately, desperately gutted that you couldn't go see your beloved Carlisle get smashed 3-0. It's fucking heartbreaking, man. Like, you can sit on a plane with 300 people, you can sit in a pub inside, but you can't be outside at a football ground wearing a mask with a reduced number of people around you. It's heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. I'm sure I'm missing something, and I'm being kind of blinkered by the fact that I'm a football fan, I'm a Cambridge fan, and I want to see my team. That it's probably making me miss something very obvious about the fact that you're not letting crowds into sort of big spaces for an obvious reason, and our numbers and so on and so forth. But for me personally, it's absolutely heartbreaking. It's also exceptionally worrying, isn't it? Math is talking about a loss in income of around $500,000. That's huge, just through, you know, not having people in the ground on match day, buying tickets, buying other things whilst they're at the ground. $500,000 when your sort of yearly turnover is what, 1.5, 2 mil anyway. That's like what, 25%. So it's huge. And, you know, Owen made a point in the first half about maybe the board being bold and you know, rolling the dice and maybe investing a tiny little bit of extra money in to sort of see us compete. And I can't see that happening. And on top of that, I'm really apprehensive about how well we have budgeted. Have we budgeted based on the fact that people would be back in the stadiums from the 1st of October? And now that they're not, what does that implication mean to us in terms of, you know, financially, where are we going to be in March when perhaps we might be allowed people back in? Personally, I think, you know, I've said it before, I think we should be allowed in the grounds. I think it should be a localized thing if certain areas are, you know, under local lockdown and have high infection rates, then by all means consider not allowing people into the ground. But in areas where things are okay, I can't see why it's not based on that. Yeah, so desperately, desperately disappointing that we're not allowed back in grounds. And, you know, what are the implications of a possible lockdown 2.0 for us? Is this bailout from the FA and the Premier League forthcoming? I'm sceptical on that. But I don't know. What does everyone else think?
I think there's so much to unpick from it. It's such a huge topic of conversation. I think the first thing, obviously, you know, that we need to take into account is that we have a vested interest in, you know, we want to go to football. So therefore, we think that we should be allowed, and we might overlook certain things, whereas we might think that going to, I don't know, the opera, for example, shouldn't be allowed in these times, but football's okay. But us, you know, that you see things across Europe, you see things within this country where at the moment, and this is obviously all caveated by the fact that I think we've just passed globally the sort of million death mark from this virus. It's a very serious virus. The infection rate's very high. Lots of people are dying. We're not taking that lightly, but there has to be some common sense used here. You know, you can't put life off forever. You know, Dortmund had 11,000 fans in the stadium on Saturday, I think it was. The European Super Cup final, I think it was, in Budapest had 20,000 fans there. In France, I think they've been allowing up to 5,000 fans into stadiums. France, by the way, as I understand it, has probably a worse situation with regards to the spread of the virus than we do in the UK. It's a much bigger country. They're allowing up to 5,000 fans. Now, it seems absolutely mental to me that you've asked football clubs to go through the whole process of, you know, getting certified. You know, some clubs are, you know, read with interest, and quite sadly, I think it was a statement from the Colchester chairman. His name escapes me. He mentioned he's literally physically altered the stadium to ensure that people can can, attend football matches. I think they've ripped out seats, that sort of thing. You know, clubs have got ready for this at huge expense on the premise that they're going to be allowed some fans into the stadium. And for me, you know, I saw something yesterday in the news that there was going to be 3,000 people allowed into the Royal Albert Hall. Well, if that's happening, why can't we have 4,000 or 5,000 at the Abbey? It's outside. It's ridiculous. And the other thing to take into account is, like, again, I don't want to try and belittle the seriousness of the virus, but how bad is it around Cambridge at the moment? Is it really that bad? I don't know. Like, how many, you know, deaths have we had in Cambridge from this? Like, I don't want to sound like I'm belittling it too much. Obviously, it's difficult to say that, you know, we should be allowed to essentially go to football and mingle quite freely without sounding like you're making light of it. But there's got to be some common sense here. And the simple fact of the matter is, if A, fans aren't allowed back, or B, there isn't some sort of rescue package from someone, whether that's the government, whether it's the Premier League, whatever it is, several football clubs will go bust. And that's a black and white fact. We don't know at this stage how far reaching that will be. The suspicion, obviously, is that the clubs that were in dire straits anyway, I think Southend, I think, you know, clubs at Oldham who aren't paying players anyway, we've already seen Macclesfield go bust. There's one or two in the conference that have already gone, I think. I think Dover was saying they've only got maybe 1 or 2 weeks left before they're going to have to just, you know, stop functioning. It might not have been Dover, it might be someone else, but the point sort of stands. It might not just be those clubs, it might be Cambridge who have just had further investment. And I think what you say, Jordan, is one of the points you raised about budgeting. I wouldn't be surprised if pretty much every club in the country had budgeted for the fact that we have some fans in the ground from October, because that's what they were told. I get that it's unpredictable. You know, the situation has changed with this. Pretty much every day there's been new restrictions coming in, but it's intensely frustrating at the moment in this country, perhaps specifically, that it seems to have been run so badly from start to finish that now it's genuinely putting at risk not just business, like general day-to-day business, but massive parts of community like lowly football clubs. And the problem, I think, with the sort of care package and that sort of thing is that football is almost viewed as the Premier League, and these are like multi-billion pound enterprises. They're not. We were talking just before the pod, there's several examples lower down. We were talking about Kevin Ellison, for example, obviously maybe not friend of the pod, but certainly someone who, you know, we all know of. At Morecambe, he was on £2,000 a month. That's £24,000 a year. He's not Gareth Bale. You know, he's not earning £500,000 a week. This is the level that we're talking about here. These clubs even need fans in the ground, or they need help. And whichever one happens, I'd rather go to the ground. I'd rather it was sort of more organic. But if that's not going to be allowed to happen, which I think is a bit, you know, come on, like... I can get on the tube, I can go to work, I can sit in an office all day, I can go to the pub after work, I can go to the Royal Albert Hall with 3,000 people, but you can't let, 1,500, 2,000, 2,500 people into an open space. Come on, like...
I think we can't... The Abbey as well is, you know, it's almost like, it's fairly unique as a football ground, in that, you know, a lot of football grounds, you come into the turnstile and you're straight into the, you know, the kind of the undercroft of the stand, you know, an enclosed space where, you know, at the Abbey, you're not, you know, you come through a separate turnstile block, you're in an open area, you walk up the steps, you're in the stand. You know, it's not like you're going to get, you know, these 500 people mingling in, you know, with the exception like the Dion Dublin bar or whatever, which they can close that off easy enough. You know, they've got food bars in the main stand outside. You know, it's not like at some grounds where you come in, you're just straight there. And But there's obviously a danger, you know, there's a danger with people being in closed space. You know, I don't think anyone's debating that. But, you know, the government kind of bringing in these local lockdowns, you know, here and there in different places, yet to football clubs, they're applying, you know, a blanket restriction. And, you know, regardless of what the situation's like in Cambridge, I'm not sure how bad it is. But it is, you know, you can just come into, you know, yeah, why can't you come into the Abbey? You can sit there for 90 minutes, you know, the toilet block separate, the food block separate. It's, yeah, it just strikes me as really, really strange that there can't be any kind of, like nuance to it, you know, as to why some clubs can, some clubs can't.
Yeah, I think the other thing I would say, this is just going purely back to Cambridge as a club. Obviously, there's a much wider problem here, but like it's something that we talked about on the last pod. Obviously, when we had a bit of uncertainty, we obviously had our suspicions that the test events, you know, letting fans back into the grounds would be cancelled. But like they've worked so hard to get things ready. Like Jordan, you went to the Fulham game. Like, you know, you went into quite a lot of detail about the experience of it. It sounded like it was fine. Like, all right, there's one or two things about making sure you leave your mask when you leave the ground, making sure that, you know, you sort of maintain social distance on the terraces, that sort of thing. But like these grounds are ready. Like they're ready to host people, and it's just going to put clubs out of business by not allowing them to do so. Like again, it's quite a Cambridge-centric thing, but what's the point in doing a test event? What's the point? Like, it's just wasted effort for everyone. Like, they're putting in place so many measures, like, and they obviously did a few other test events across the country, I think, the week after. And it just seems to me like it's, like I think it was mentioned just a moment ago, it's a blanket decision, which isn't really based on anything. It's just like, oh, well, the infection rate is getting higher. We can't allow fans back in without there being any real evidence or any real thinking behind it. Like, just taking the test events for, you know, as an example, obviously, I think it was before they sort of cancelled it completely. It was a maximum of 1,000 fans, wasn't it? And that applied whether it was, I think, Luton were due to host one or Middlesbrough. Kenilworth Road holds, 10,000 people? Middlesbrough holds about 35,000. And it's the same. It's exactly the same capacity that's allowed. That's mental. Like, it's just this like blanket thinking without too much behind it. And that's obviously been a theme of the whole management, the whole thing since the start of it. But yeah, I mean,
it's like the initial kind of consultations were us. We did one, didn't we, with the government. So did Charlton. And, you know, we've got, you know, a very rustic old fashioned stadium. Charlton have got a reasonably modern stadium. I'd say it's, you know, probably representative of most kind of Championship and Premier League stadiums is the Valley. We're, you know, maybe a generic kind of like League One and League Two stadium. So, you know, what worked, you know, what why do it at two separate places if you're not going to treat them differently? You know, treat an old-fashioned stadium separate to a modern stadium, one where people might, you know, all be funneled into one area before finding their seats, as opposed to the Abbey, where, you know, half time at the Abbey, everyone mingles out the back of the Abbey, they mingle out the back of the, you know, the car park, around the back of the main stand. There's plenty of room there. And, you know, yeah, the club has just done so much work. But, you know, the fact that the second test event, the Carlisle test event, you know, that was going ahead with 2,500 people. You know, the club emailed out 1,600 season ticket holders their seats. To have the rug pulled from under their feet, like, you know, what was it, two nights before? Was it Thursday night? You know, that gives them no time. You know, how the hell do you rearrange that? You told 1,600 people you can safely come to an event, and now you've got to tell 600 of them completely randomly they can't. Like, you know, the club absolutely made the right decision there in cancelling it off. It would have been nice to go ahead. I was really looking forward to it, but, you know, they were just, I think you said, Tom, just stitched up, just absolutely stitched up by the government's decision on that.
I think the issue with the government, what I was just going to say quickly is, I think the issue with the government is they maybe had their fingers burnt quite rightly for moving slowly in responding back in sort of March time, and sport was at the forefront of that. There was obviously there's a Liverpool Champions League game that went ahead. A lot of questions about whether that should have happened. I can't remember the big race that was at the same sort of time, but I'm sure Tom Walker both lost and won money on that. There you go. He was there spreading it around. super spreader, Tom Walker. That's why he's not allowed in the Abbey. But I think they are conscious that they, you know, they came into criticism for reacting slowly the time before. And quite rightly, they should be conscious of the fact that they should be learning from how they've dealt with the pandemic, not just in March, but all the months since. I feel like their reaction this time was, all right, the R number's going up, stop sport, stop sort of mass gatherings at sport, because keep sort of crowds away. And perhaps they haven't really looked into it it's like a blanket decision, like we were saying, and maybe they haven't looked into it as much detail as they could. And, you know, maybe it could be limited to numbers and it could be limited to certain areas and it could be something that is a rolling process and you're reviewing it locally on a frequent basis. But I can understand why they have postponed having crowds back for sure. The biggest worry for me is they've made this decision, what, nearly a month ago now, or at least four league games ago now. And there's been no discussion about looking at it again or updating it or reversing it in some sort of way. And that's my biggest concern, is that it seems to be this statement, you're not allowed people in the stadiums, end of. And they're talking about, you know, March as being this kind of sort of utopia where everything's fine and the warm weather will make things all right. And people, you know, clubs won't survive until March. So that's my biggest worry, is that they're not looking at potentially, you know, relaxing it for football clubs and letting people in, and not just football clubs, but all, you know, all sport, you know, rugby and whatever else. But if they're not going to be looking at allowing people back into the grounds, they have to have a plan B. And I know there's been murmurs about bailouts and speaking to the FA and speaking to the Premier League, but, you know, it's been four league games, nearly a month. There's no concrete answer there, and I can't see that being resolved anytime soon. And, you know, is the resolution that might come from this path one that we want? What's going to be the caveat of the Premier League getting out their checkbook and then helping us out? You know, we talked about it way back at the start of lockdown, that this could be checkmate for the Prem getting what they want, and that's B teams in our league. I if I'm Man City or whoever else, I couldn't care less if Southend go out of business, because that's a spot in the 92 that could be filled by my B team. And I think we're just in a very, very precarious situation now where something needs to happen, but what happens might not be the best thing for football in the long term.
I think the other thing worth remembering is, you know, Man City don't need fans in the ground. Man United don't need fans in the ground. You know, the big teams don't. They make obviously a significant amount of money from fans in the ground, but compared to their annual turnovers, you know, it's fuck all. It's like, you know, 10%. Whereas for us, you know, we need fans in the ground. We don't, you know, we get Soddle TV money, we get Soddle money from transfers. You know, Man City could probably survive two or three seasons without anyone going into their ground, just based on the, you know, the money they get from the sponsorship deals, the money they get from UEFA and the Champions League and the, you know, and the TV money they get. So, you know, there's no incentive for the Premier League. And, you know, when people think of football, they think of, you know, they think of Gareth Bale on £500,000 a week. They think of, you know, Salah and Sterling and, you know, all these players on fantastic wages. You know, they don't think of, you know, Kevin Ellison on £25,000 a year. You know, but he's got a mortgage to pay. You know, as much as we like him or dislike him, you know, he's got kids to feed, he's got a mortgage to pay, he's got a, you know, car insurance, petrol, you know, all these bills that we have. And, you know, he's not earning a huge amount, you know, for someone who's, what, nearly 40 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, the other point that probably should be raised is, like, the narrative is sort of coming from the top of the game. Guys like Sean Dyche, for example, he made... I think what's been, it's obviously like a comparison, which it doesn't really ring true. I think he said something to the effect of, you know, you don't see top hedge funds helping out, you know, smaller sized hedge funds during this sort of crisis, which is true.
Yeah, you don't see Amazon bailing out local shops on the high street.
The problem is, like, I'm not being funny, but like the biggest hedge funds in the country, they don't rely on the smallest hedge funds doing okay. Like Burnley, like, take them as a pinpoint example. Their team is full of players who have come through the Football League. They're making their money now based on the success of the English football pyramid. Nick Pope, he's gone right through. Westwood, the captain, I think he scored last night. Played for Crewe, for example. You know, came through the academy there. It's just this absolute, like, disregard that comes from the top of the game. And I think, like you say, Jordan, they're not going to give us this money for free. I know I think they gave us an advance on the sort of payments that we get anyway, which is, as Mav has said, it's just kicking the can down the road. It's absolutely that. if we're going to get some sort of bailout, there's going to be some sort of condition attached. The obvious one is B teams. There is something with regards to, I think, allowing them to sign sort of foreign youngsters as well, which apparently we have a say, and I'm not sure of the exact details behind it, but it's going to come with attachments. But yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because I'm not sure who it was who was sort of running running our Twitter feed during the week. Whoever it was made a really good point that, if anything, I mean, yeah, it was you, brilliant as usual, superb contract.
Definitely wasn't Swindle.
Yeah. Worryingly, there's, I guess, a theory that some of these, you know, bigger Premier League clubs actually maybe stand to profit from us, from clubs like Cambridge going out of business, as harsh as it sounds. If Cambridge got out of business, the simple facts are there's 5,000 people there who are going to watch TV, and they're going, you know, they don't want us going to Cambridge. They want us paying subscriptions to BT Sport because that ultimately benefits them. It's tough to see a way out without several millions of pounds being handed down, basically. I don't know if the season will finish. You know, obviously we can't predict what's going to happen with the virus, but if we don't have fans in the ground until March, like you rightly said, Jordan, club's going to go bust. It's as simple as that. There needs to be something.
I know we're a couple of weeks late to the party on this one, but Owen mentioned Gareth Bale earlier, and it reminded me, and obviously I can see Swindle's face on the screen, who's a big Spurs fan, as well as being a Carlisle fan, yeah, as well as being a Grimsby fan. And it just reminded me that the day that Gareth Bale rejoined Spurs was the day that Macclesfield got wound up, and the big news story across all the back pages and across all the sports coverage was Bale is back at Spurs. Not that the club that's been going since like the 1890s or something ridiculous like that has been wound up and it's gone out of business. And half, I know, you could
have saved him. You know, if he was, yeah, half his signing on fee, 10% of his signing on fee would probably have helped him out. You know, it's.
And I know you can say that, you know, that's the bigger reported story because people want to talk about more positive and upbeat things, and the Prem is massive, but. And you can also say that Macclesfield didn't go bust because of COVID. There's a lot of other reasons further back in their history. But I think it just emphasises what a sorry state the sort of lower parts of the EFL are at the moment, that we are struggling and there are teams on the edge, and there'll be more and more teams on the edge as we go through these next 6 months. And it's just not the pressing talking point that it should be. And instead, it's more about, oh, look at this another fantastic star that's back in the Prem. It's worrying. But like Tom says, the Prem is big business. And, you know, our Leagues 2 and Leagues 1 and even to an extent the Championship, are they kind of in the way of blocking what could be this, you know, even bigger sort of blockbuster business? It's worrying times, but yeah.
It really annoyed me. Really annoyed me to see Sean Dyche come out with those comments because, you know, as someone who, you know, like you mentioned there, Tom, was, you know, a team that relies on the EFL for some of its players. You know, if it was a manager of like Liverpool or, you know, Arsenal or City or whatever, I could kind of understand that attitude. But, you know, it's Sean Dyche, he's manager of fucking Burnley. They're shit. You know, they're a Championship team, but got lucky. You know, it's like, what's he on about? Like, you know, Burnley are going to get relegated in the next few years, and then they're not going to get any money from the Premier League. You know, Premier League aren't going to care about them. They're not going to give a shit about Sean Dyche and Burnley, you know. And then they're going to be paying these huge contracts to players that they've signed while they're in the Premier League. And, you know, they're going to be fucked, you know. They're going to be like another Sunderland or something like that. And, you know, and Dyche as well, you know, people say he's a smart guy. He's, you know, often touted for the England job. It's like, come on, man. Like, the England job is, you know, you should be representing English football, not League. And English football goes, you know, a long way deeper than just kind of the top 20 teams in the country.
Is anyone else really depressed right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, obviously, just to bring up a story that, and the thing is, I think sometimes some of the sort of papers, like the tabloids, that sort of thing, they can tend to boil it down to like a question of like, it's not Gareth Bale's responsibility to bail out Macclesfield Town. No one's suggesting it is. It's just more the sort of wider point that, like you said, on the same day that he signs for Spurs, they go bust. And the amount of money swirling around at the top of the game should be trickling down and helping the bottom of the game. We know that in football, in society, that doesn't really happen. But I think an interesting story to sort of bring back up is, I think about 18 months ago now, you might remember Richard Scudamore left his role as, I think it was the CEO of the Premier League. And the Premier League clubs offered him a £5 million payoff. They offered that money to one guy who'd been running the Premier League. And when it comes to the fact of 72 football clubs potentially on the brink, they're like, no, we're not doing that. You know, we're not going to bail you out. Where they just put their hands in their pockets. And it's just, I don't know. I can't put into words just like quite how frustrating the whole situation is, quite how, you know, depressing the whole situation is. Obviously, football sort of operates in a bubble. We know that. We know the clubs weren't running necessarily sustainably before this crisis. There was always going to be some sort of, you know, the bubble was going to burst at some point. But it's disappointing. It's depressing to see that it's such a struggle to get a few million from the Premier League to kind of stop clubs from going bust. But yeah, we'll see. But like you, Jordan, I'm sceptical about how this will work. I would be surprised if it didn't result in some level of B team, some level of reserve team, in at least competitive competition, whether that's the league, whether it's in more cup competitions, whatever it is. That seems to be the obvious bargaining tool. But we'll see what happens. You know, there's sort of murmurings that things are going on, sort of behind the scenes. There's discussions taking place, that sort of thing. I imagine there will be some sort of package, but it's just really important that it is. It solves problems and it doesn't just delay them, because otherwise, what's the point? You know, you're just delaying the inevitable. Yeah, we'll see what it is, and hopefully that comes sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's depressing and sickening in equal measure, and it's something that we will continue to address because it's a completely ongoing issue. It massively affects the club that we support, and we need to keep on talking about it. Jordan, don't say anything about the club that I support.
About three clubs that you support, it affects, yeah.
Yeah, so I've got it harder than most. No, but we will keep on talking about it, and we will see what happens. But to end on a little bit of a lighter note before we go, we're going to do the Paul Mullen totalizer that we've now brought in as the new, the fun part to end the pod on. So in the games that coming up in October, how many goals do we all think Paul Mullen, bearing in mind we are counting the own goal against Morecambe as a Paul Mullen goal?
Wait, I thought we weren't. I thought we were counting the Fulham goal. I thought we were going all goals in so far. So he's on. Okay. So he's on five, right?
Yeah.
Give him the Morecambe goal. Give him that.
Yeah, we talked about this during the break. He did a Cruyff turn on the edge of the box. I don't care. That's his goal.
Right.
I don't care what's happening.
That's an executive decision made by under the Abbey stand.
Yeah, thank you very much. The dubious goals panel.
Dubious blokes panel.
Yeah, dubious people. Dubious panel, if anything. Do you know what? When I predicted in the season preview that Paul Mullen would be our top goal scorer and he scored 19 goals, I felt proper bullish. And now I'm like, I've undercooked it a little bit. He's such a good player, isn't he? Throughout August, we've got, what, 7 games left?
And yeah.
We're counting the trophies.
Yeah.
I'll go for another 4. Can we go for another 4? 1 and 2.
Jordan?
Mark Bonner's going to listen to this pod and he's going to be like, you know what, Jordan's right, I'm going to change the formation and I'm going to have Wes and El Mazzouni and Hannon all behind Mullen, and yeah, that's going to spring goals. I'm not going to go as high as Tom. I'm going to go for 3 goals for Paul Mullen in October with 2 assists from Wesley the Wizard.
Good. Owen?
I think he'll get more than 2. I don't want to say 3 or 4, so I'm going to be Mr. Confident this week and, yeah, say 5.
Go 7.
7?
So, yeah, I'm last to go. I'm keeping a log of all these throughout the next, you know, however many pods we get before football is ended indefinitely. I see those seven games, and I like the trophy game away at Burton. I think they're going to field a weak squad, so I'm going to be the guy. I'm going to go seven.
I know we said we'd like to end it on a bit of a positive note, predicting that Paul Mullin's going to sort of break the goal scoring record throughout October. We do need to end on a bit of a negative, actually. News breaking throughout this podcast with regards to the future of a certain Kwesi Appiah who's off to India for football, playing in the Super League. He's not doing a gap year. He's apparently wanted by North East United, which is a shame because it would have been lovely to see him back in several highlights of him scoring a lot of goals for us last night.
North East United, like the Pro Evo version of Newcastle.
Yeah. Maybe this has just been lost in translation and it's Cambridge United who are North East of London and it's just been reported wrong. Maybe there's still hope for Kwesi coming. But sadly, it looks like that ship has sailed. But we'll be back with you to look ahead and back at Cambridge United in 4 weeks' time or so, maybe sooner with all the games that we've got coming. And looking at where our predictions lie and how Cambridge United are looking in the league. Jordan Warland, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Owen Kiernan, thank you.
Thank you.